MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, listen!
Abe, how many hours would you say you and I have played Diablo the franchise together?
Ugh.
Is it 100?
No.
Right? Oh, it could be.
We
played all the way through Diablo 3 together.
No, that's wrong.
No, we did. Didn't we? We played almost all of it together. I don't know. I'm making up a number.
I would say over 50, but less than 100.
Between 50 and 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a lot still.
That is a lot. I was going to say, like, this might be like our game. Like, if we right, like it's this or Rocket League. This is the game you and I play the most.
Right. But we usually just talk about other stuff because it's one of those mindless grinds, you know?
Exactly. That's a key ingredient for this thing that we're going to talk about on today's one-upsmanship. Welcome, shipheads, to a glorious episode, a highly anticipated episode of your favorite and best video game podcast on the internet. This is one of your hosts, Adam Ganser. Our pal Mike is out this week, and with us, his glorious partner on the sister network Small Beans and great friend and co-director of mine. Introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, this is Abe Epperson. Thanks for the kind words, and I'm happy to be here.
That's right. You brought all your accolades and shoulder pads and like all the things you put on your breastplate. Yep.
I go out every day with my shoulder pads that everyone immediately recognizes and says, look, that's a man with shoulder pads.
He needs
my respect. That's how it works.
That man deserves respect because look how shiny his shoulders are.
Yeah. Fathers will tell their daughters, you need to find a man with shoulder pads.
Bring him home. Then I'll finally bless you.
Yeah.
That's right. I mentioned that only because aside from being an illustrious and esteemed guest, Abe and I have a lot of time invested in this game, which I know is a fan favorite and probably one of the most beloved games and franchises in PC gaming, at least.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
That's safe to say, wouldn't you? And that Diablo 2. Mm-hmm. Diablo 2, we are going to be talking about today. We're going to get into all the dungeons, go through all the layers, every act, until we finally decide, should we keep or delete the precious Diablo 2, which means we're going to snap right away into format and pass our very first checkpoint and do the new and improved segment on one-upsmanship, Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit, in which our illustrious guest will explain to someone who's never heard of Diablo 2 what it is. Ooh. Take it away, sir.
All right. All right, let's go. Let's go. All right.
Let's go.
So Diablo 2 Resurrected, which is what I assume this we're talking about, you know, like
talking about
the update, right? Okay.
That's right.
2021. It came out. It's an action RPG based off the 2000 game Diablo 2. It's a remake. It's not a reboot or anything like that. It's just straight up remastering, really, with quality of life in it. It's an action RPG, hack and slash, one of the OGs, but mainly it's a looter. That's really what it brought to the table. And you play as one of seven classes. There's Paladin, Barb, Sorcerer. There's Necromancer. There's you can tell how much I play this game. Druid. And an Assassin. And you're the hero of the story. And there's five acts. And each act follows a series of linear quests in a procedurally generated area maps. And each act has a town that acts as your hub for your stash, shops, quest givers, while you reach waypoints to further your journey deeper into the acts. And then in Act 4, you kill Diablo, the devil. And then there's an Act 5, which originally was a DLC for Diablo 2 called Lord of Destruction.
Wow.
Where you kill another prime evil named Baal or Bale, depending on when you've played this game, who's the brother of Diablo and Mephisto. And it's all about killing monsters and looting bosses for top tier loot to create alongside your skill tree builds and make you more powerful and progress you through the game. And the fun of the game comes from getting unique loot and creating builds. You can just decimate mobs. That's it.
Yeah, I think that's spot on.
Yes.
That's absolutely what this game is. If you've never heard of it, you probably haven't played much in this genre because as far as I can tell, never having played the original in its heyday, but it seems like Diablo 2 kind of is the benchmark for this genre of dungeon crawling looters, you know, of which there are many.
Yeah. It was the earliest big title that, you know, there's always that combination. Yeah. There's maybe a few that are earlier. I don't remember when like Baldur's Gate came out, but it's like in terms of dungeon
crawler,
it's
based on Baldur's Gate. Yeah,
it made it a franchise. It was like, oh, they did it. We leveled up in terms of our, is this how many people will play this?
I think that's right. It for a little while, it held the title of like fastest selling game of all time on a PC.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There were other little details about where it falls in this timeline. It is after Baldur's Gate. It is sort of, I think, the most beloved of the D&D adaptation series, you know, because there's a bunch of them that have sort of took all the premise, like not just the premise, but a lot of the mechanics of D&D and then gamified it. And this is sort of one of the most important of those, according to, you know, game thinks, according to the game thinks around the internet.
Yeah.
That's all the stuff that we've inherited when we talk about Diablo 2. So let's pass our next checkpoint and let's get right into how you and I feel in our rants about this game. Either one of us can go first. Typically, I would go first, but Abe, since we're both hosts, we can do whatever we want. Do you want to go first?
Oh, geez.
That's right. You're a host, Abe.
I thought I was guest.
Baby.
I was in guest mindset.
No. You're a host.
I would let you go first.
Okay.
Since
great.
I talked for a while.
Great. Okay, great. All right. Adam Ganser plugging in. Diablo 2 is just fine. It's not incredible. It's fine. I think a lot of people who love this game love it for nostalgic reasons. Uh-huh. And far be it from me to take that away from anybody. I can see why it's fun. I have gotten my talons in several looters over the years. This is not my favorite one. But I understand that it's a formative one in this arc. Like, so I'm not here to say that it isn't. And I think for me, the question of it is this game seminal will come down to how important is the mechanics that it's bringing to bear, in how important are those for games in general? I would say in general, this game is not the type of game that gets me super excited, though I do like looters. We all know that I love Destiny 2. Trust me, that some stuff will come up from Destiny 2 in this episode, because that's my favorite of the looter genre. But it's not the only one. I like The Division 2. I like that recent, I like Borderlands, that franchise, and even Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which we talked about on this podcast last year. So there's a lot of them that I like. I also tend to like stuff that Blizzard has made. Like, I like StarCraft, and I've played a little bit of World of Warcraft, not enough to comment on it yet, sadly. But I get it. I get that Blizzard and this game matter for the history of it. But that said, it's not that great of a game. Here's what I mean by that. There's a lot of reused assets. The game loop itself is pretty flat. Like, there's really not a lot to this. It's very much like, you know, you build one of the two or three skill trees that you get for your character. And by the way, the game sort of inadvertently incentivizes you to max out one skill tree before you start another one, because progress is very incremental, and you don't start seeing the real powers of this skill tree till later in the tree. So, like, you know, the game turns out to be kind of the same for a long stretch of it. Loot itself, while it has tiers and there's lots of different things it can do, is a fundamentally same experience. Now, I don't want to say that it's entirely bland. It has a kind of there's an escalation in how much damage you can do. And there's very little in gaming that's more fun than taking a couple of friends through a dungeon and, like, hanging out and blazing through a series of, like, you know, wolfmen or whatever, or like centipede guys with sticks or whatever, you know, and like all those assets and all that, like, you know, creepy gothic stuff is fun, and it's fun to do with friends. But ultimately, it's sort of like clicking a button and, like, you know, the animation happens, and then you're just sort of scanning through your stuff in your inventory and warping back to town. And there's some things even in this remaster that should have been fixed for quality of life reasons that aren't, like the idea of having to identify objects, or the idea of having a scroll that you need to use in order to go back to town. Just like stuff that they didn't want to mess with what Diablo 2 was when it came out, so they didn't fix it. And it's like, yeah, but that just makes the game more dumb and cumbersome. So, like, on a core level, there's nothing wrong with this if you like it. Like, I'm not here to say no, you don't. Like, sure, okay, I get it, you like it, but it's not the most complicated loop. It feels like it sort of reduces all the endorphins I get out of an action sequence to the click of a mouse. Or I played this particular one on console for the second time, and on console, it's even less directed than that, I would say, like, because you can't really aim as much with the buttons. Like, you're sort of at the mercy of the auto aim of your character, and it's even worse there. So it's not as good as on a console, in my opinion. So that's my mechanic conversation. As a story, this story feels the way a lot of video games feel, which is they sort of have gated the sequences with bosses. And every story is ultimately about, how do you finally get to beat Mephisto or beat Baal or beat Diablo? And the journey is a little bit arbitrary. And the defeating Diablo is not the most satisfying thing in gaming, because there's not a lot of personal stakes. It's all kind of lore stakes. And I think if you're the kind of person that gets invested in a narrative like you would in Dungeons and Dragons because you want to see what happens, like, if you enjoy it on sort of a pulp comic-y kind of way, you might like it. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that it's not a very personalized or emotionally evocative story. It's just kind of cruising through a wacky spiritual D&D type world and killing a lot of enemies that are kind of the same and then repeating it. And hey, man, far be it from me to say you didn't like that. But to me, I don't see how this game matters in 2023 when so many things have improved upon it in meaningful ways. That's my rant. I know.
You I know. Bastard.
I know it.
You Jezebel. Oh man, yeah. Yeah. I just disagree.
Okay, great. Good.
That's how it goes.
I want you to.
Do I respond to you, or do I just rant?
No, you do your own rant. You can respond, but
do
your
own rant,
how much
of my rant should be me talking about what I want to talk about and the nonsense that you just mentioned?
You know, buddy, that's up to you. It's all your decision. All
right, cool. Yeah.
However you want to manage.
Player two, strapping in, blowing the cartridge, plugging it in, all that stuff. Yeah, so there's a few games, not many, but I'll claim that I am probably a victim of nostalgia goggles, for sure. I'm probably in love with the time more than the merits of the game, but there's something that still kind of nags at me, and I don't think that's the complete story. So I don't entirely accept that criticism of my, criticize my take all you want, but I mean, like, I don't think it's just that. So my hot take is ultimately, and it kind of goes into what you were saying, is the statement polish is overrated.
Mm.
In terms of story to gameplay balance, the idea of loot pools and how they're constructed in this game, grind difficulty, stuff that to me actually matters in this genre, this game has never been beat by any of the clones. Like Torchlight, Baldur's Gate, Path of Exile, even like Demon's Souls, like not even touching it to me. And it is simply the best dungeon crawler. I mean, Diablo 2. I mean, I think Diablo 2 Resurrected is now the premier way to play Diablo 2.
Right.
Because I think there's quality of life stuff that honestly, since you never even played the first one, you don't even know. It was even worse.
I looked it up. Diablo 2 Resurrected is a very minimally changed game.
It's pretty similar. I think it's how they interpreted, well, if we're going to remake this game and it was popular for so many years and so many diehard fans, we kind of catering to them. But anyway, it's a game that takes time and it definitely needs a grind. Yes, but the grind is surprisingly easy and quick if you know what you're doing and you kind of have the right builds and in your mindset. So it makes getting top tier loot fun in a way that I don't think modern looters do. Mm. They just don't have that component. It just doesn't exist because they think the grind is something to, I think modern games think that the grind is something that they need to make simplified. And I don't think that that truly is the fun of the game. Uniqueness is a feature, not a bug. And the world is big enough, but it's not too big. So things don't really get bogged down by things like travel that I think have modern problems. Like I'm basically talking about like you are correct that it ignores 20 years of evolution in game design because it didn't really, it existed before that. And then when they redid it for a different purpose. And my one knock against D2, which by the way, when you say D2, you think it's Destiny 2, but it's actually Diablo 2.
Fair enough.
That it's catered to the diehard fans because it's a classic game, so it didn't change much. But I love the retro aspect of this game through and through. I don't think it's broke, so I don't want to fix it. And even with like some of the clunkiness that you mentioned from things like the isometric view, and like how, like you were mentioning clicking on it, like, or like clicking on a screen to walk around in a way, you played with a controller. I don't stand for that shit. I do not find that 20 years of game design makes this better. I don't need it to be a Kingdom Hearts or some shit. That's fine. It's a different game. This is about menus and loot, baby. So I don't care honestly about like the gripes of some of the cosmetics and the gripes about some of the clunkiness. If you're into this type of thing, I think it's ultimately more rewarding than any game that you pour into like now. If you're looking for a looter experience, that's my opinion. So yeah, like, cause you mentioned like idea, like there's some aspects like the identification, like using a scroll to get back to town and stuff and that cumbersome element. You're totally right about that. I don't think it hurts or breaks the game. It's just a small little, but what games don't have that? I think it's also one of those games that you really do need to pour hours into because you were mentioning like hanging out and like in a dungeon and stuff like that, which is really fun. But the way I played this game is different than I think the way you played the game.
No doubt. That's in part why I wanted you on this episode is because we can contrast those. Absolutely.
Because I think that there is a casual way in which you play this game that is fun, and Diablo 3 catered to, because it more people play that way. But If you really want to unlock what the game has to offer, and so we're really evaluating the game on its merit, I really do think that there's a way in which you play, and it's kind of more of a power user. It's knowing the builds, knowing what things to go for, mm-hmm. and ignoring stuff that doesn't. Now, games, there's a huge philosophy about and conversation about should games ask that of their audience? Well, I mean, I think it's the type of audience that's what they want. They're already into the concept like loot tables and organizing information and being like, oh, I'm excited that I'm going to go to this specific area now, because then, there'll be Mephisto and I'll get a Shaco drop or something like that. And like the exhilaration that you get when that happens, that's what it's for, that moment, that, and all other moments are building to that moment, and it's perfectly well done. So I guess that's end of rant. I could go on, but like,
no, and we're going to, you raised a lot of really key points that is, it's perfect. Exactly what I want to talk about with this game. And we're going to get into that once we warp back to town, identify some objects, talk to Deckard Cain, and decide who we're bringing along on the next wing of our journey after these.
Stay a while and listen.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I had no idea you're going to bring out your Deckard Cain impression.
Dude, there's so many good ones.
Yeah, there are.
I actually forget his name, but in Act 4, there's like another one. Hail to you, champion. Which is one of my favorite. Like, every time he says it, I say it to myself, lowly in my breath, like, hail to you, champion. Like, I say it back to the game.
The voice acting is very silly in this game, but in a very winsome way, I would say. Yeah, like, it's very charming. It's, by the way, we're back. All that's staying in, so I hope you liked it. Everyone heard it, because I love Abe impressions. They're my favorite thing. Okay, let's pass our biggest checkpoint to date, the one that really gets us into the meat of the episode, and get right into Game On, where you and I will argue to the death, probably where one of us finally drops all of our gold over whether or not we have who is right about this game and who is not. Let me ask you a real quick question right off the top. And that is, how do you play this game? Like, what do you think the ideal way to play this game that makes it fun? And like, explain that to me.
On the ladder, shortly, on the ladder, playing with a group of friends, ideally more than like four, ideally like eight. And you're working together to maximize the seven builds. So you have one of each. In your party, you have one of each of those classes and builds that there's nothing, there's no area you can go where immunities matter, so you can destroy anything. Now, obviously, not everyone has a group of seven friends, so the game does an excellent job.
Or seven friends, period.
Or seven friends, period. Right, right, right. My mom thinks I have more than seven friends.
But she doesn't know. I'm but missing
she
a paladin.
Know. She, yeah. She's also hardcore into D2, by the way.
No, I can see it, and I would be thrilled Beth to partner Apperson. With her.
Yeah, no. No, but like, I think that they give it to you right there, which is like, you have a specific purpose. Like, I want to do a ball run, right?
Okay.
I want to just grind. I want to kill him 45 times tonight. And let's have a group of players come in, ideally your friends, but they also can just be randos that are of the same level of you, and you just go and demolish him.
Right.
And then do it again every minute, every 2 minutes, you know, and then you race and grab the loot, race and grab the loot. And then by the end of the night, maybe you have gotten something that changes an entire build for a different character.
Right. So the idea is that you're sort of partnering with a couple of people to it, either concentrate on one person's build, or maybe you all benefit from this like dungeon crawl. But it's a grind. Like, the grind is the thing. It's not the story. Mm-hmm. It's we finally get this one cool piece of loot, or we get enough XP that our character's, you know, skill tree opens up a little bit. Right. That's the basic idea.
Yeah.
Okay. And all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, there's nothing wrong. No, that makes sense. Like,
I do
that's
think
the
story. I'll say there's something funny, which is when you play a game or like a game loop that you really like, I think the story starts to become fun. Like, even if it's I
agree.
Can't even see the story objectively.
I agree.
Because it's just a series of actions that I must do. But like, over time, as I played, you know, the story's actually pretty good.
That is what fucking happens, man. Like I completely agree. As you know, I play Destiny 2, which I will, for the purpose of this episode, not reference too many times, also not called D2. But Destiny 2 has the same phenomenon where you get a bunch of people together, and over time they start being like, you know, the story is actually really deep. And it's like, no, it's not.
Like, it's simple and it does the job. That's
right. Like, Destiny 2 has the advantage of being later and having a little bit more capability of cinematics. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, to the degree that it wants to, accomplishes it. But ultimately, what it's selling is the same experience as what you just said, which is get your friends together, go grind for this one particular thing, or this, like, you know, for the XP of it all, where you expand your character and, you know, open up some, you know, new builds or whatever. And that's the joy of it, right? That's the joy of it. So to me, that means that this game needs to be structured around a few key things for it to be worth it. The first is interesting or unique weapons. And that's where I don't get it with Diablo 2, because to me, the weapons are not that interesting or game changing. The skill sets, I'm open to that. I can maybe even stipulate that they get interesting later on. But like, the weapons seem pretty disposable to me, you know, whereas you play, I mean, a lot of these other games. Well, see, that's the thing. It's like, well, if the armor and weapons are disposable, then what am I really doing this for?
Because the rarity of an amazing thing, the journey to getting to the thing, because you're going to need the lame drop to get you to the next lame drop,
of course,
to get you to the next lame drop, so you can effectively grind a specific boss. And then once you've gotten to the point where you're doing enough DPS, you get that rune to drop, You know, and, now and you have a rune word.
Now you have
and
a rune.
And now the rune word is insane because it's plus three to bone skill. And it's just like, you mean all of that whole tree is now plus three? Yes. And it's like, well, now everything I do is like eight times as good. And it's like suddenly the game opens up. And they have, and so the weapons are more specific, and you know, that's the concepts of legendaries, like in Borderlands and Diablo 3 and, you know, all of these. There's unique weapons that are just not only unique in that they are rare, but they have
they
some
change
skill
how the game
or attribute, and it changes the way you play the game, So I just think that, maybe your experience, I would say, at honestly, like, 30 to, you know, with D2... with probably like 30 hours down or however many you had.
You're getting a similar feeling, you're saying.
You're getting a similar feeling, but you're not getting the good stuff.
See, I think I got to argue with that. Like,
you never
went
to Nightmare. You never went to Hell. You didn't really play it. Like, you played a third of the game, maybe.
I did finish the campaign, but I didn't play it on Nightmare mode, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, Nightmare mode and Hell is where shit gets good.
Well, okay, sure. So, like, that means, and I'm not disparaging the game. I'm just like, qualifying what you're saying is how I'm hearing it, that means this game requires 50, 60 hours to get to the thing that makes it addictive and fun.
Where you're a god.
Right. And I get the appeal of that. I really do. I'm the guy who, you remember this, last year, I wasn't going to any of our movie nights because instead of doing that, I was coupling up with six
putting
randos
time, dude.
And trying to get Vex Mythoclast which is a gun in Destiny 2. And I did it 120 times before I finally got it. So like the key emotional experience, I get it. But the thing that seems punitive to me is that it doesn't take me that long to get to a place where I can get Vex Mythoclast. It's just an RNG question. Like in your case, like where the real sweet loot is, it feels like, man, you got to really already like this grind to start this grind.
For runes and rune words, there are early level rune words that are fucking slap. There are ways to play the game. I think I gave... Okay.
I
forget
cool
what
loot.
It was. Here's the thing. You play Druid, and Druid isn't... There are some pretty good Druid rune words.
Well, you and I had a little argument later. About should I be a Druid or not when we started this run.
And I was like, I was like, nah.
I was like, that's you not true. But you also, said you could be like, a werewolf, and I was like, great, I'd like to be a werewolf. That, and you're like, you could be a werebear. And I said, even better.
See, now we know the kind of commitment you're giving to this. It's like a joke to you. You think I'm a joke?
No. I love this technique that you have pioneered of undermining my credibility here. But I put in plenty of time on Diablo 2, and I've played franchise enough.
That's fair.
To say, I'm not saying this is bad. Please, nobody hear me saying that. I'm just saying that unless you played it in its heyday where you really had that addiction experience before there were these iterations on it, if you didn't have that experience, it's hard to go back and see why this particular outing is the one that people are stoked about, other than somebody explaining it to you, like on a spreadsheet. Well, in 2000, this didn't exist. And because I feel like in every aspect of gameplay and the actual addiction thing, the addiction loop, lots of games are better than this now. Right. Lots and lots of games. Now, there's a lot of looters that we aren't talking about that seem to also have iterated on this formula that I haven't even played enough to comment on, like Path of Exile. Have you played that?
I played Path of Exile and I find that too much. That's for
too
even
much for you.
More diehard.
That's
for my brother who was like in 2001 actually globally ranked like on Diablo. He put
that's
in
right.
so much time.
Yeah, that's
it,
right.
It like destroyed his college, you know, like that's and so I got ushered into like the highest highs because he would be like, take this character. I don't want it in anymore.
Like
get it
another,
away from me. And I'm like, talk about this is the level 99 character, you know? So I got access to like what the game could be early on without being good at it. So
that's awesome though, because that's another thing that's actually really fun about Diablo is that there was a period of time, and I don't know if it's still happening because I didn't look into this, where like there was an actual off mark, like a black market of selling items and stuff.
Yes.
You know, where like people got so into this game and like so into finding the rare and unique loot that people could like actually make money by doing this grind and then selling the items to people.
I think
who
it was
meet
one of the first forums. I think
that's
it was
pretty awesome.
D2 JSP. Yeah. I remember that shit. And I remember my brother would sell like P gems and runes
right.
and literally make hundreds of dollars.
Right. Like, and that's like, that's incredible. And also, what's wrong with video games? Like, that's
oh yeah,
both
for real.
Things.
For real.
Yeah.
But like, and there's a, because there's still always going to be that kind of thing,
right?
Because of the just the rarity of the items, but also there's a market because, like, you can just like there would be benchmark runes like an Ist rune that would like one Ist rune for you know a Shaco helmet or one Ist rune for yada yada, or and then there would be like so they would have like benchmarks for the cost of these things. So all you do is you just go and farm those runes.
Right. Of course.
And now you just have money, you know? So I mean, it wasn't even getting unique items. It was just like someone has a drop or I just need a bunch of stones of Jordan. You
and
know,
I would
like,
be, I would be offended by that because that seems so predatory as a thing. But the truth of the matter is video games in general have created more ancillary jobs, not less since that time, not necessarily paying for items, which seems very mercenary. But like, again, to go back to most of these looters, almost every looter has an economy of people who play it and then tell you these are the things that you can get. Like, here's how you get them, like sort of give you like they're Sherpas, if you will. You know, you're kind of paying for Sherpas. Every game economy seems to have that. So, like, even though I think the idea of selling an item that you grinded for to a less like a less accomplished player seems a little dubious to me, it's clear there's a market for it that's not going to be denied.
It's only for like the hardcore people, though.
But that's who
you know?
That's who all these games are ultimately for. All these games are ultimately for people who they got on the sweet, sweet addiction train.
Mm-hmm. That's
you know, right. And like, hey, man, as an addict of one of these type of games, I get it. I think they're fun. And I don't think they're necessarily immoral or wrong for doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a question of like, so like, does this one get you and why? You know, and I'm this is why I come back to I'm having a hard time with Diablo 2 because the weapons and the grind are both a little bland to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a blandness anytime. I don't know that blandness is highly subjective. So I totally understand it. There's no need to fight on it.
Right.
But like there's something that you said in your rant that stuck with me about like I think the key to your hesitance to not seeing past like what you think is blandness. Like said something where you're like, you only have three skill trees.
There's not a lot of skill trees for each class.
Right. But but that's the thing with this game. And that's what I was kind of trying to say is that like a lot of games number goes up and there's some synergies that like, oh yeah, two numbers go up. But this game truly has unique builds where it's like, you cast this thing for 20 levels and you can put 20, you know, like points into it. And then you get this other synergy. Now that the utility of that one thing now turns into an entirely different thing. And like this, so like, I think that the skill trees for the game itself is a lot deeper than we give credit to. And I would say that in terms of modern game design, they don't really break the bank in this way. They don't try to make it so that the synergies are like crazy revolutionary to your whole skill tree the second that you put like 5 points into it.
I think you're right
about
that.
This game kind of does, and that's unique to this game and really satisfying and changes the way in which the game is played. And I think they balanced for it. So that's why ad hoc or just like before anything you do, it feels bland because you kind of get over the, all right, I go do the thing, you know, click the button, click the button, click the button.
Right.
Which all games have. But yeah, I understand.
All games have a little bit of that.
One.
Yeah.
It's an older one, so it feels especially slow. But like once you start playing with like, oh, because I have this new armor, I can do this new thing, or now I can teleport and I'm not even a sorcerer. Now your game's completely different.
I want to support some of what you're saying by contrasting it with like a couple of game examples out there. So like, I would say Borderlands has a much shallower tree, even though they have classes.
I think so. Yeah.
Like ultimately what you're able, like the powers you're able to unlock and the specializing you're able to do is less meaningful than Diablo 2. And that game is, of course, much later on. Destiny 2 has taken 10 years to even create working builds off of the three class types. And that's because it's taken forever for them to like vary up the light and specialties and stuff. So like that game has way less class specialization than Diablo 2, for sure. Like it's not even close. There's other games out there, like, I mean, obviously Division 2 basically doesn't have it, and other games like that. I'm wondering about, and this is a game I haven't played enough, so I'm kind of asking if you've played it. Have you played much Warframe?
I tried Warframe for a bit, and it really does, it feels like Borderlands, because like, as you mentioned with Borderlands, the skill trees aren't really that influential, because it's about the guns.
Warframe seems to have, seems, from what I can tell, I mean, I haven't played it enough to say, but I, the vibe I get is that Warframe is a much more malleable experience when it comes to the combat. Like the combat can really be wide open in that game compared to any of the games we've listed so far where it really isn't.
Yeah. You know? If looter shooter is your cup of tea, shooter as opposed to an action RPG or an isometric view, like they're completely different things.
Well, I think that Warframe also has swords and melee stuff too. And I think it has a pretty robust melee stuff. I'm just saying that because, all these game franchises, like all these RPGs that have classes or specializations, have to sort of be accountable to, like, do they stack up to different actual ways to play the game? Do they become necessary in the end game to like activities, right? So like Swaim and I get in these arguments all the time about Witcher 3. Did Witcher 3 have meaningful class decisions with your Geralt? Like if you specialize in this, if you build up this tree, is it a different play style? And it kind of, that ends up kind of being a little bit subjective where people are like, yeah, it meant something to me. But the actual gameplay doesn't change a whole bunch in most of those games. Even something like Cyberpunk, where you can decide between, you know, like, am I going to be a am I going to be a mind terrorist, or am I going to hack people to pieces?
It's not
going to
suddenly turn into Katamari Damacy, but
unfortunately,
you know, like in Borderlands, there's guns that are like, oh, it does this. It does this thing where the ricochets do all of the damage. Or
that's right.
In Diablo, a great example would be like you have, like a sorcerer who can do an area of effect or do a bolt or something like that. But there's some unique classes, especially in Nightmare for the Druid. There's a great class that's an elemental build, which is, has the spell Hurricane. And if you pump up those synergies, you literally cast it and always have it on.
It's so good.
You usually have a bear to tank, but you just always have it on and you run around and you kill everything.
Right.
And it's a boring build, but it's like a, it's kind of a, like a transitive build, or like a, like a liminal build, because it's like, get me out of Nightmare.
Get me out of, get me to the end of the level. Like it's a, it's a escape hatch
so
kind of build. Right.
It's kind of like the builds are there for utility. You also have builds that are like, this build just does one. You kill the
right
pit.
I do this with
you
it.
You go to the pit and you kill everything, you know?
I mean, so I say this like actually in support of your point. I think Diablo 2 is actually better than people give it credit for at creating fairly unique experiences with combat, given the skill trees that you open up, even though like ultimately it is sort of just like clicking a button, casting a spell, and the spell looks like this and does that. But like, I don't know what else we're really expecting. You know what I mean?
Like, same thing with a looter shooter, like Destiny or like Warframe. What are you going to do? Roll around and run up to them and smash them or shoot them? You know, like,
I mean, you're
going to do one.
That is ultimately, they become sort of arbitrary distinctions if you get too like too
I agree with that.
I think macrocosmic about it, but one thing that I feel like Diablo 2 wasn't yet sophisticated enough for that I do miss when I play it is the idea of the campaign, or even just sort of like the interim mission stuff, building to more complex gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
You know, like that just really doesn't exist at all in Diablo. Like
it's true. It's more stronger enemies, more of them.
Right. Most games that have had that have existed in the last, like, I don't know, even 15 years, which is not that much, that not that far away from Diablo 2, have a kind of there's a sophisticated training sense in which like some of the missions are there to train you on these other mechanics, which you're then going to use in the end game content or in the strikes or whatever it is that are sort of the ultimate experience of this game. Diablo doesn't really have that. And I would say even other Blizzard games kind of have that. Like if you play through like StarCraft's campaign or like StarCraft 2's campaign, they mm-hmm. sort of give you a tutorial, like miniaturized experience of StarCraft to build up to the actual real-time strategy, like full-on combat right. that is the final game. And so they've sort of structured their campaign around that. Diablo doesn't have that. It's just the campaign is all that it is. Do you think that's a knock against the game, or you're like, nah, they're specialists?
I think that's just an aspect about being early, early in gaming, like, because, I mean, Pac-Man also didn't have a tutorial, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're just, like, talking about, like, the age in which the game was made and what was, like, the kind of preeminent zeitgeist in which people were talking about and what they wanted out of games. It wasn't really on the top of the list. And then once it started becoming the top of the list, because there was games that would fail because of it and et cetera, like it became a conversation, and then the conversation was ended and we all have tutorials for every game now. And it's
that's
solved.
True.
So I think tutorial is like, it's a total issue. Like I think it's a preference. And I think that's one of the aspects of game evolution that have just improved over time. But I don't think it can be a knock against something that exists out of, like, in the past, like they didn't have the benefit of that knowledge.
It can't be a knock like this game is bad because it's not this. But I do think that when you're talking about where a game belongs in the larger conversation, it not having that is detrimental to its long-term legacy, right? Like, not that that makes the game itself intrinsically bad, but that means the game's legacy itself is
right.
somewhat less important because it's less sophisticated and we've iterated on
it. I guess my question to you is like stuff like the warp skip in Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah, the warp whistle, yep.
Does that game worse because it doesn't tell you to even think outside of the box in that way?
Say that to me a different way. Ask me that question a different way.
If a game ultimately doesn't teach you to think in the way that benefits or like allows you to hack around a part of the game, and it doesn't teach you that mindset or that skill set, does that make the game worse always?
Like, so in this case, I think you're saying in the analogy, because Mario didn't train you to look for the warp whistle, but it's in the
game.
Even
think about,
is
like,
that a
jump
problem?
On top of the thing and run to the next room and find a secret room.
Right. Like, if a game has a kind of, like, a hidden sort of trap door that it's not training you for, but is in the game and some people find it, is that a knock against the game? I'm going to say increasingly no. And I say increasingly no because now game designers can lean on the internet to exposit that for them.
True.
Right? Like, I mean, very famously, Destiny 1 had a raid. I want to say it was a raid where, like, they had a fucking room that was operating in binary code where, like, all the guardians had to execute a binary code. And there's no fucking way one person could have ever executed that.
Oh, well, they did. And now they're actually generals of our alien armies.
Exactly. Yeah. They got promoted to space general.
Ender Wiggin.
But again, there's like the average gamer, the above average gamer, the hardcore gamer, the Destiny fiend. None of those people are going to get that. That is for mm-hmm. one person out there to crack and share on the internet. So we all get to be like, yeah.
And like, then you do it and you get the delicious
meat. Then you do it
loot.
And you get the delicious meat. Right, exactly. Once the crab has finally been broken open.
Sweet meat.
It's exactly. So like, do I count that against the game? I don't know. Like, that's clearly designed with that purpose in mind. Mario 3 wasn't. Mario 3, unless we believe that this was designed so that people can sell books, like sell guides.
Right, yeah, I mean, Mario 3 is, I intentionally chose an outdated term. You're right to point out the internet.
Right.
Diablo did exist with the internet. There
but
was
not in the same way.
Guides.
Yeah, like the two things were
but
coming
I mean,
up
like,
at the same time.
I remember like pulling up essentially like rune words, the list of the rune words, you know, like that existed. And forums was like a huge, that's how it used to be done, which is crazy. It's
which not is great.
There wasn't a Wikia. There wasn't a Wikipedia for it. It was just like, you go onto the Diablo, like battle.net,
Exactly.
Exactly.
There's a forum, and it's like, what do you guys do when you play a necro? You know, like,
but they
this is what I do.
A forum into their interface, which means they did intend for this to be a communal experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, so in my mind, that just that addition to the game as the way to interface with it says that they wanted this to be a fundamentally communal experience.
Exactly. And
it's
think
great
the
for that. It's really good
I
for
think
that.
The community of Diablo 2 was awesome back in
Agreed.
The day. It was wholesome.
Yes,
it was full of helpful
true.
People and guilds. The game wasn't toxic really that much. I mean, there was a concept of muling where back in the day before they like improved the stash with Diablo 2 Resurrected, you would run around and find like a spot on a map in a random server where you'd be like, no one's ever going to think to look here. And you drop all your shit so you could
it's like pirates
to ferry it to another character. Like this is old days. This is 2000, you know, like
I love that.
And then I remember one time I came, I like ran around and I didn't do a good enough job because I wanted to go quick. And some dude was just grabbing all my shit. And I was like, God damn it. And so there's moments like that, but there was no incentive to be an asshole in this game. Only help other people. There are PvP servers and there exists for that purpose, which is another aspect of like how this game, if you think about Diablo 2, just like old school, how it really paved the way to guide the hand of the community.
That
one that's
true.
Still used in games today.
Yeah.
Look at Rust. They knew to separate PvE versus PvP servers. Yeah. There's a legacy to finding like different servers with different rules. And that didn't exist before, really. I mean, I guess it didn't, like, if you consider, like, deathmatch in, like, Quake or something like that.
But that's not the same thing. That's competitive.
It's not the same thing.
It's not a community-building solution.
They're all ultimately the same. It's just different game modes. But this is, like, this predates WoW. And
right.
I'm not saying it's the first game to develop the concept, but they nailed it early on, and a lot of developers just learned to mimic all of its concepts.
That might be one of the most enduring things about it, is that it happened to sort of be, or and maybe not happen to, it came out at a time where internet communities were a sort of fledgling thing that people were in good faith building. Like they were really trying to create a community that existed only online, and Diablo was a great facilitator of that. Sort of like mystery box things were really cool when Lost came out and people watched Lost and it was a communal event and everybody lost their fucking minds. But once we've gone through the portal, it's a little hard to go back, and it's not hard to go back and see why it's good or important. It's just like it's not an experience that's going to exist in the same way ever again.
No,
you know,
it's not.
And that's cool, though. That is a thing that bears remembering about this game and about this franchise.
It's about paving the way. And it's also about a nostalgia for a particular time and a way in which it was done. I'm not going to fall for that. Like,
sure.
I don't think it's necessarily like that time was a better time or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I give it to this game for being one of the first to really nail it. And then everyone mimicked it. And here we are now. You know, it's like it's in the DNA of how we do this kind of stuff.
I agree that does matter when we talk about.
Also, one thing I want to say.
Sure.
Just real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Because I find it kind of profound, honestly.
OK.
Blizzard supported this game and its servers like D2, the classic, and updates for new seasons and ladders. They never changed. There wasn't new content
for like 20 years, right?
20 years.
Yeah.
And I think it still does.
Yeah.
Like D2 Classic was playable.
Yeah.
And probably had like 10,000 players for 20 years consistently. That's crazy.
Yeah.
When you think about like what EA does, or you think about Call of Duties, you know, like what? 20 years and it's not giving, there's no micro payments, no fluff.
Right.
Just like, yeah, you love the game. Have a little space. It doesn't take that much from us.
That's true.
I thought that's cool.
That is cool. Blizzard is, that is one of their good pieces of their legacy. There are some games that have, they've been supported for a really long time. Like I want to say the Halos were supported for a really long time.
Right. Yeah.
But this is like one of the best of that. And that's also cool. I think that goes back to the community that it built is infectious, and the designers felt like they wanted it to continue to exist. And that's pretty rad. I mean, it really
is. That's pretty rad.
Okay. Well, I want to take us real quick back through the portal, back to town to get rid of some of these axes that we picked up that are actually worthless. And
yeah, but
prepare
they
for
give you
fun.
Money so you can roll or you can gamble.
That's all I want to do is gamble.
It was so addictive.
It's so good. All right.
Just gamble circlets all day.
I'm going to open my tome. We're passing through at the end of this word.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Finally have, you know, we're not weighed down by all that excess bullshit because we've shed it.
Hell yeah.
I have one question for you. So like, this is not an entirely unstrategic, timing for this conversation, Abe. What do you want out of Diablo 4 in light of, like, how does Diablo 4 contribute to the legacy of Diablo 2 in your mind? Like,
it's
is it
tough.
More the same?
Because that's a two type of questions, right?
Yes.
What's the game I want to be made for me, for Abe? Because Abe's the hero of this story.
But I think Abe is typologically the same as a lot of people who like Diablo 2.
I agree. And I think we got Diablo 2 resurrected.
Uh-huh.
We're the weird ones in the group that that were like. They placated. They were like, all right, there's dozens of us. And they were like, yes, you get a game. So I have no like thought in my head that it's going to go this way. I would love it for it to be more D2, but they're going to go more D3, honestly. I mean, yeah. Like, it's just how it works now. It's kind of like the same thing of like, I loved the golden era of JRPGs, right?
I grew up on shit
like Lufia 2 yep. and Final Fantasy yep. and all that shit.
Chrono Trigger.
And like, I will always be sad when a new Final Fantasy comes out because it's like, oh yeah, it's just an action RPG now. It's like Zelda to me, you know? It has all the other Final Fantasy things, but it's basically, they didn't, turn-based was the shit one. That was... Because I want to be able to
less action in your video games, broadly.
I mean, that was just how I preferred to play the game.
Sure.
You know, disagree with me, fine. I think turn-based is one of those things that it's now entirely on mobile, and that's fine. And we also have games on Kickstarter and stuff like that. We can, once again, be our weird little group in our weird little rooms.
Turn-based is not dead. It's just not the mainstream like it was.
I don't think that Blizzard's going to go any direction towards D2.
Okay.
It's a non-point, you know, like they're going to, if anything, they're going to make it more streamlined for the casual player so that the number goes up, but in a way that is more satisfying because they learned when people got satisfied from D3. So there'll be an improvement in that regard. And maybe there'll be some cool builds and maybe there'll be some sweet looking action. And it will probably be a fun game to play casually. I don't play D2 casually. It's also one of the reasons I don't play D2 that much anymore.
Because I get out my matrices and I track my progress.
You see, I'm a grown man.
Right,
Adam,
right.
And I can't afford to be into Diablo 2 right now.
I remember I had a friend in college.
I had a friend in college, Raymond, who was this he was amazing. He was just this guy who we didn't have very much in common, but we're all very kind to each other. We're in each other's friendship circles.
Sure.
And then one day, and we'd known each other for like 3 years, and it was just like, we're just very kind to each other. We loved being around each other. I loved the way they saw the world, but couldn't be two different people. And
those are the best kind of friends.
Casually just, I don't even know how it came up, but Diablo 2, I think it was like, oh, you know what's crazy is my brother started playing Diablo 2 again, so I'm thinking about picking it up to like a room. He was like, wait, you play Diablo 2? And I met the only legitimately other than my brother, like person who was more into Diablo 2 than I was.
That's great.
Like, and he was just insane.
That's great.
I was just like, Raymond, so you want to play? And he's like, yeah. And then like before I know it, it's like day one of the server. And he's just like, do you want this? And I'm like, oh, shit.
See, but that
you've been playing for 18 hours, haven't you?
That is a great experience though, like as a person who's been on the other end of it, like you just were, like playing with somebody who's really into it and has cool stuff and like knows how to do it, like knows how to make the most of it, you see a lot of the thought that went into what the game is, you know, and like also you see why the crowd that loves it because it requires a kind of like inside seasoned intelligent reasoned process. They have to create a process that is that nobody told them. They figured it out over time, and I think, you know, a lot of games want to take that kind of reasoning away from their players so that it's a more passive experience because
you can just plug in and you're playing. Well, a lot of people want to everyone else.
A lot of people want to, and I'm going to use this word gently, relax when they play video games. And relaxing means, you know, this, it's somewhere between a movie and an interactive experience. Right. Mm-hmm. Or it's somewhere more toward a movie than Diablo 2 is probably a safer way to say it. And they're not wrong. Like, that's going to sell more than Diablo 2 probably will. But there are people out there who, like, they get fiendy for let me figure out a way to best manage this world. Like, I honestly feel like if my dad had been a young man in 2000 and like not married or whatever, he might have loved this. Because it like it just there's a certain kind of brain, like not an engineering brain, but a kind of a process brain that really gets tickled by this, you know? And I like that this exists for them. Yeah. No, you're a process brain a little bit.
Like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Like Abe is a guy who, for those of you who don't know, who like created his own camera lenses in film school. Why? Because he's got a little bit of a process brain, you know?
I want to know what it looked like.
Right. I think that kind of curiosity gets rewarded in this game. I think that's what it's for. You know, although again, it's not deep emotionally. Like it's not narratively deep where like you scratch at this little weird corner and you find a cool story or whatever, like some I don't know, like Torment or something, you know, Tides of Numenera, like something like that, where there's just a lot of layers to it. It's not like that. And I think that is a bit of a ding against it for me. But I think we're ready to pass our final checkpoint. Wouldn't you agree, Abe?
Hell yeah, dude.
And get into whether we will keep or delete Diablo 2 from our celestial hard drive. Abe, you are a host. You get a full vote. What say you?
One of two. Of course. I mean, Diablo 2 Resurrected is the best way premier to play way it. To play yeah. Diablo 2. And Diablo 2, for not just the seminal reasons and the formation of how we play action RPGs and RPGs in general, or looters or MMOs, like, it's the strands of its DNA extend all the way for 20 years. And it's undeniable that you can look, like, rarely do you find games that have that kind of legacy. So if you're going to put it on a hard drive, this is the game to put it on, put on the hard drive from this genre. It's got to be this one. So, you know, I did mention that I have nostalgia goggles for this time, but like, I just don't see what other metric you can really beat when it comes to putting it on the hard drive. That means that my game that I love is saved.
I mean, that's a good argument. So like, here's where I am with this. It's hard to not acknowledge that historically this is the one people feel matters of this entire genre. Like, if you put all the games we've mentioned today that were looters against each other and let the internet vote, they would 100% keep Diablo 2.
I mean, I think there's people who are even more hardcore. Like, some people are going to put Path of Exile over
there
it,
are
you know?
People who would disagree, but I think that if I feel pretty confident in saying that if we were going to crowdsource the answer to this question, Diablo 2 would win.
Probably.
Yeah, like, because that's my experience, for a lot of the reasons that I think you accurately stated. Like, it did build up a community. It is sort of the first of its kind. It is a satisfying progression for hardcore fans. Like, it's built for those people. It is a great communal experience. In fact, I remember when I was 20 years old, a bunch of my friends were doing LAN parties, and this was the game they were playing, you know, and it seemed really cool. I didn't have a computer, so I couldn't do it. That is not why I'm so not as up high on it, but maybe it factors in a little bit, Abe. I can't say. All I can say is that I'm trying to be as objective as I can and acknowledge all of that. But also acknowledge that as a video game experience, I don't think that anything about it exists in its best form here. I really think a lot of games are better, including Diablo 3. I think Diablo 3 is a better game. I get that it's not as important to people who love Diablo, but it's hard for me to see how the history outweighs the fact that the game itself is a little bit unenticing to a new gamer now. And most of the ones that I want to keep are, that is not true. Like, you can play it and really get it. So I'm going to delete this game. I do it with a heavy heart because I get that some people are going to be furious. This is always like, if Mike feels very strongly that I messed up, he can make his pitch. When we do the hard drive episode, maybe you can write him a note, Abe, and force him to do it.
Say, don't fix let it. Die.
Yeah. Fix what he did. But
this,
like,
is important. The aliens will know.
Yeah, that's right. All I can say is I don't think that looters as a genre deserve like a bunch of entries on this hard drive. I feel like maybe one or two. And my gut says that we may need to revisit a Borderlands, but I also still think Destiny 2 is a more interesting game than Diablo 2 for mechanics. Sorry.
Of course you did.
I know. I'm sorry, but I do think
it comes down to, I think it's highly subjective.
Of course. And like, this is my task as a person who's taken this on is to use my subjectivity for what I hope
take
is
no
good.
Pleasure, yeah. But I am
no,
king.
No, I take absolutely no pleasure in eliminating Diablo 2 or in the hate that I'm going to get for it. But it's just not doing it.
I don't think you're even going to get that much hate, dude. This is not 2005 2012. This is 2023. Most people are like, what that? Who this?
That's right. Otherwise, I'm going to have to repair my lightning mace and throw my lava ball at them and hope that's good enough to get out of this
and
alive.
And I agree. I agree with you. You're like, looters only get two. I'm like, platformers get like two.
You know, like that's
a good conversation. We have a lot of platformers.
And I know that would fuck you up that means you would get one Mario, probably. You know,
I don't know if that's what it means.
It absolutely is what it means. You need a different franchise. You need to go with the Sonic.
Not sure if I agree with that.
I'm just a humble co-host doing my part.
I love that you're pushing on this.
Challenging you.
I love it. Yeah. No, it's great. I really think that I'm glad that somebody's super passionate about looters on this episode. It was not an accident that I asked you to be on this because I want the conversation to be fair and to be I don't want to ever have a game on here where nobody loves it or thinks it's any good. You know, like,
yeah, because then what are we talking about?
What are we doing here? Like, this podcast isn't just like, here's a game, let's chat about that. You for doing your duty and defending a thing that you love. And thank you for filling in admirably as a guest host this week. And Abe, if people like hearing your melodious baritone voice, where can they hear more of that?
So you head on over to patreon.com/smallbeans, as was alluded earlier in this podcast. Small Beans is a group of podcasters who do several different types of shows, and it was co-founded by myself and Michael Swaim of this podcast. And Adam Ganser is there. He's in a lot of our shows.
Sure am.
And he's in the Brain Trust. It's like our main squeeze, and it's how you get content from this group in addition to one-upsmanship, you know? So it's Patreon does it, but if you want the free feed, which is only so much of our catalog, it's a certain percentage. It's not everything. Doesn't have some of the special sweet sauce. You can just find that anywhere you check out Small Beans.
I mean, you should know that Abe and I are directors. That's our trade. And we have a specific podcast on Small Beans that's just him and I.
Yes, we do. Called, if you like our band,
if you like
in particular,
this bit, it's called Director Piece Theater, where we analyze and, I guess you might say, exposit the trade secrets of directors for movies that you wouldn't think have great filmmaking, but do. We love doing that podcast. Yeah. It's hard work, and we'd love for you to enjoy that if you had a good time listening to this.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. Abe, love you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man. This is a blast.
Isn't it?
I can always chat with you about anything that matters.
That's right.
And know that I'm in good hands. That's right.
Such good hands.
What a good guy, right? Let's hear it for Adam Ganser, everybody.
Yes, all of you should clap. Yes. Thank you.
Everyone, please clap. Yeah, I love you, man.
I love you, too. We got to get the hell out of here now.
Work complete.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.